And now it's time for Power of Prophecy with your host, former professor at the University of Texas at Austin, career United States Air Force officer, and best-selling author, Tex Mars.
Friends, this is Tex Mars. Welcome to another edition of Power of Prophecy. Today we're going to talk about, well, it could just be the most important subject you'll hear this year, or almost any year for that matter. It really has to do with your life, your security, your family, your nation, really everything about us, because it's all being influenced by one particular group of people. A lot of people don't know about this, and it's very dangerous to talk about the subject that we're going to discuss tonight. A lot of people have been killed. Honestly, I'm not trying to be dramatic. Have been killed for discussing this topic or exposing even a little bitty smidgen of what we're going to be looking at today. And the book, what the book covers that I'm going to be offering today. It's a new book. It's by really a master wordsmith, Michael Collins Piper, and he's my guest today. You know, we've had Michael Collins Piper on many times before, and I've never been disappointed. When Michael tells me or I get in the mail his newest book, and he's had so many, the guy is a writing machine, and he doesn't put them out just to have quantity. Each one is designed and tailor-made for a specific cause and is thoroughly documented. But when I get one, I immediately want to read it, put everything else aside, because I know it's going to have a lot of meat in it, a lot of really important things. I got this book in the mail, and Michael was so good to sort of give me an early copy. And I saw the title right away, and I went, wow, Michael's going to lay it on the line here. And I wasn't disappointed. The title of it is The Confessions of an Anti-Semite. The Confessions of an Anti-Semite. Now, right away, you know you have to be a courageous, brave man to even admit that you're anti-Semite. But to confess it and put it in a book and explain why, wow, that's a very dangerous, inflammatory thing. Now, first of all, I want to tell you something about Michael Collins Piper. I know him. Wanda knows him. In fact, everybody in the ministry knows Michael. He was here for our Liberty and Truth conference, gave a great talk. So many of you got the video and you know about Michael. You got his books. You know of him. Now, I'll tell you, the truth of it is I'm going to start a fight, Michael, today. Yeah, he's laughing, but I'm going to fight him because, you see, he confesses that he's an anti-Semite, but I'm going to insist he is not an anti-Semite. As a matter of fact, even his cat Donald loves Michael Collins Piper. Who wouldn't? But the problem is that Michael Collins is one thing I'm going to tell you about. He is a truth teller. He seems to have this part of his constitution. Unlike most people, he just can't stand lies. And this is what, Michael, welcome to the program. And isn't that what gets you in a lot of trouble?
You know, you're absolutely right, Tex. You put your finger on something there. I guess I'm pretty transparent in that respect, because that's one thing that really upsets me, lying and deception. And unfortunately, this has been the hallmark of the organized Jewish community and the state of Israel. And, you know, I tell you, it's funny, as I people told me, oh, you don't want to give that title to your book because you'll be accused of being an anti-Semite. I said, we know the situation. You're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't when it comes to discussing the state of Israel. The most sincere people in the world get called anti-Semitic because they criticize the state of Israel, and some of these people don't have an anti-Semitic bone in their body. And I tell you what, Tex, it's kind of funny. I went to a college. The on-campus population was about 40% Jewish. And my views about the state of Israel and about Jewish power were already solidly formed in my mind by the time I got to college. But I want to tell you, I had several very good friends who were Jewish and who knew my political views about Jewish power and about Zionism and the state of Israel. But we were very good friends. I had several very, very good friends in college who were Jewish and who knew my political views. In fact, it's kind of funny. On my 50th birthday 2 years ago, I got an email from one of my old friends in college who I hadn't seen in like 30 years, and he said to me, he says, He said, Michael, he said, I know, quote unquote, they don't like you. He says, but I remember you as being a very friendly and energetic guy with whom I always enjoyed debating. And this was one of my Jewish friends from college. Fully aware of my work, writing for American Free Press and my books and so forth. And so you see, and I, over the years, I have done business on a regular basis with some really fine people who were Jewish. You know, I don't have a bigoted bone in my body.
No, you really don't. I mean, it's amazing that you would be called an anti-Semite.
So
I
don't
understand
mind,
why.
But I do oppose the extraordinary role of Jewish political power in America, because I think it's very deleterious to our nation's fabric. Mm. I think it's dangerous to our nation's survival. And, you know, I just wish the Jews would get off our backs. That's really what it comes down to. If there was any other group of people that exercised such extraordinary power in so many unpleasant ways, I would oppose them too. But the fact is, it's the Jews.
It is.
I mean,
it is
people love about it. It is the Jews as an organized group. That doesn't mean, of course, that every single Jew in America or in the world supports the overall Jewish agenda, because we know that they don't. I have known some of the most prominent and respected of the anti-Israel or otherwise just simply critical of Israel Jews, whether they're outright anti-Zionist or just critical of Israel. Some of them have been my personal friends. I've known them all. I mean, people have heard of the late Jack Bernstein. Jack was a friend of mine. I have a Christmas card that Jack sent me one year when he was in the Veterans Administration before he died in a VA hospital. Mark Lane, the anti-Zionist Jewish attorney, I've known him for years. The late Dr. Alfred Lilienthal, one of the premier Jewish critics of Israel. Dr. Lilienthal asked me to collaborate on his memoirs with him. Unfortunately, I didn't have the time to do it, but what an honor that was. I mean, you know, the list goes on and on. So you know, I mean, I'm not just talking through my hat here. I have very real personal experience with prominent Jewish critics of Israel, and like you, I have tangled with these organized Jewish groups that have a desire to silence us.
Okay, now let's look at the Jews. Now, what is the percentage, let's say, in America of the population of 320 million or so? How many are Jews?
I think the number is generally reckoned to be 6 to 8 million, you know, and I'm not really sure to tell you the truth, Tex.
So that's about the same number as the population of Israel itself, then.
Pretty much, yeah. Actually, okay. If I'm not mistaken, there actually are more Jews in the United States than in Israel itself. I could be wrong about that. And frankly, to be frank here, I have never really even believed the official Jewish population statistics. It's really neither here nor there. But I mean, as anyone knows, the Jewish people have always been a little bit concerned about literally revealing their numbers, because they have always perceived themselves to be potential victims of the people with whom in whose population they live. So they have been, frankly, very cagey. And if your mind works that way, I guess you can't fault them for trying to disguise their numbers. So. But the bottom line of it is, Tex, no matter what their population is, they have an extraordinary amount of wealth and power concentrated in their community, and that gives them extraordinary political power over the United States and consequently over the world.
Okay, now we probably have, I don't know. You know, my wife likes the songs because they're sort of nice and quiet and whatever, of Norah Jones. And Norah Jones evidently is Indian American. I mean, not Native American, but I mean from the country of India.
Okay.
And I would say, in looking around Austin, and this is a university city, there are a lot of Indians here, you know, from India. A lot of Pakistanis are here.
Mm-hmm.
I go downtown and I meet people from Uruguay and Chile and Argentina. Quite a contingent. Now, I sort of come from... So I'm sort of Heinz 57, but mainly Scottish. Now, I'm just going to guess and say there might be as many Scottish Americans as there are Jewish. But it's interesting that this 2 or 3%, whatever it is, of Americans who are Jewish have so much more power their lobbies, their businesses, their banks, the entertainment world, all these areas. I'd like to ask you about the total encompassing picture. But nobody really talks about the Scottish Americans. In fact, the Scottish American lobby did not just meet, and every political leader in America practically, you know, everybody but Ron Paul, I guess, was invited.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Senate Republican and Democrat leaders, the House Republican and Senate, you could just name them all. Of course, Obama went there to speak. He met Prime Minister Netanyahu at the White House, who came over for the APAC, the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee. So this American-Israel Public Affairs Committee, APAC, is so powerful that everybody goes and talks to them. And, of course, what they talk about is how we are going to have your back, Israel. We're going to help you fight your wars. If you're attacked, then it's the same as us being attacked. We will destroy Iran if they dare to, you know, go up against you. All these things, it's sort of kissing the boots, or really licking the soles of the boots, by all these American bigwigs to Israel. But, you know, if I call for a big Scottish-American conference, I don't think any of them would show up. And right down here, in fact, down here in Central Texas, we have the big Verst Festival, you know, and they bring out their hot dogs and their beer, and all the German-Americans go there. They dance and sing songs. And I know for a fact that there's probably 30 million German-Americans. But if the German-American Alliance or their lobby met in Washington, D.C., they probably couldn't get the freshman congressman from Idaho to come and talk to them. You know what I mean?
That's interesting. Well, you know, really what it comes down to, I think probably in the end, is the reality of the extraordinary concentration of money hands of the Jewish lobby.
Money.
I mean, you can't get away from that. I mean, that it's so funny because just stating a given fact that the Jews have an extraordinary amount of wealth concentrated in their hands, that's called anti-Semitic to say that, even though it's an absolute fact. You know, I mean, it's just an absolute fact. But sure. And that's where it all comes together. Maybe 30 million German Americans, but they don't think of themselves as German Americans, nor do they organize as German Americans, nor do they probably even worry about Germany.
You know, that's true. They really, they know nothing but Angela Merkel, the Chancellor of Germany, or the policy of the European Community.
And you know, the thing is, I mean, I guess in one sense, you know, I said this the other day to somebody. We were having a discussion here at American Free Press about the issue of the meeting of APAC and so forth. You know, I don't have any problem with Jewish Americans, you know, organizing politically, because it's their right to do it. But the problem, you know, I mean, that's what America is all about, or it's supposed to be all about, political freedom. And I don't advocate taking the political freedom away from the Jews. But I do see the problem when there is this massive amount of money involved that is used to advance this agenda, which often is beneficial to a foreign nation, and that nation being the state of Israel. And you can't get away from it. I mean, you know, just give you one good, solid, firm example. We have Newt Gingrich running for the Republican presidential nomination. And the entirety of his political career between the time he left Congress and the time he started running for president. Now, he had big consulting jobs, you know, with a variety of people. But his political organization, with the name of which escapes me at the moment, was funded with $6 million in seed money from this Jewish gambling tycoon, Sheldon Adelson, who also has very close ties to Israel. His wife, his current wife, is an Israeli who presumably has a dual citizenship between the United States and Israel, but she is an Israeli. Well, they gave him $6 million. They gave Newt Gingrich $6 million. Now, $6 million is a lot of money, any way you cut it. So they bankrolled Newt Gingrich. Then when Gingrich announced for president, we've seen Adelson and his wife and members of their family give, thus far, as reported, in excess of $11 million to Newt Gingrich's presidential campaign. Now, I mean, and Newt Gingrich has been one of the most boisterous, over-the-top supporters of Israel, going so far as to recently claim that there's no such thing as a Palestinian.
Yeah, there are no Palestinian people. So I guess if you kill them all, you're killing phantoms.
Yeah,
they're really exactly. Not people.
So here's just one example of extraordinary Jewish wealth. Now, this is not to say that there's not a lot of non-Jews are out there bankrolling political candidates. There are indeed. But the bottom line of it is the excess of Jewish wealth in terms, or I should say the amount of Jewish wealth combined with the political power that comes with it has made America. Now, I hear people say that Mike Piper says the Jews rule America. I don't believe that. I do believe, though, that they are the fulcrum upon which power is balanced in this country. That if the Jews take a strong position on something, they will generally get their way. And when they do take a position, it's very, very clear what their position is. And they have dozens, and I say dozens, hundreds of organizations that are all, although they're independent of one another and feud with one another, they all basically operate on the same page. They will have cosmetic differences here and there. Some groups are a little more liberal. Some groups are conservative, you know, using those old traditional terms. But inevitably, they do come together, and that is an immense power throughout every major city, every major town in America. There's very, very few places where Jewish power doesn't play a role, even in the smallest cities in America. I once knew, and this is a, you know, I think anecdotes often fill a very important part in discussing things like this, because you can find many, many examples of such things that underscore the point. But I knew of a small city in Pennsylvania where the organized Jewish community, a butcher in a grocery store, a major chain grocery store, offended a Jewish woman. He made some remark to her, which was an anti-Semitic remark. The organized Jewish community in that city, and it was a very small Jewish community, but very wealthy Jewish community, they basically drove that supermarket out of business through a variety of means. They drove a supermarket out of business that otherwise was a thriving concern. But the Jewish pressure was such that they were able to manipulate, maneuver, and cause problems for the supermarket. Now, that's a very small example, you know, but it reflects exactly how the Jews operate as an organized community in this country. So when it comes to the really big issues, and the issues of war and peace, and the Jews have been responsible for U.S. involvement in more than a few wars, and I mean that as an organized group, they have pushed for U.S. involvement in a variety of wars, and they are once again trying to get us into a war, this time with Iran. And you know, I just don't like war. I just don't like war, and I don't like warmongers.
Mm. Well, yeah, they are certainly warmongers for a number of reasons. And money, of course, it goes back to money ultimately. Now, with this power base that they have, where is it all felt? Is it in academia, entertainment, Washington, D.C., banking?
Well, you know, it's so, you know, I'll tell you, the bottom line of it is, I mean, let's just get to the hardcore basics here. They control the money system. The Federal Reserve money monopoly that dominates this country is controlled by a series of private banks that are all largely owned by international Jewish financial interests. So right there, let's just say it flat out, the Jews control the money system in this country.
Yeah.
Now, there are other non-Jewish elements that have an influence in it, but primarily they are the controllers of it. The Jews also control the mass broadcast media in this country. Now, you know, I hear it said that's an old anti-Semitic canard. Well, I mean, Tex, ABC, CBS, NBC are all Jewish controlled.
Oh, sure.
The Washington Post, the New York Times, the Chicago Tribune, the Los Angeles Times, plus dozens of major newspapers in smaller cities across America, are in the hands of Jewish families and financial interests. Time and Newsweek, U.S. News and World Report, all Jewish controlled. So, I mean, is it a myth that the Jews control the media? I mean, I hear it said that that's a myth, that it's an anti-Semitic myth, a canard. They always call them canards.
But how can truth be a canard? How can truth be a myth?
Well,
it's either true or it's not. It's true, so how can it be a myth?
Tex, listen, I'll tell you what. I one of the most extraordinary things that I have ever read was a statement made by a very, very well-known and respected English Jewish attorney. His name at the moment escapes me, but I quote him in this book of mine, The Confessions of an Anti-Semite. In the book, I point out that in his book about anti-Semitism, this Jewish attorney, who's one of the most respected lawyers, Jewish or otherwise, in England, he pretty much says in his book, and I wish I had the exact quote handy, but he says in his book that anything that is critical of Jews is by its nature thus a lie. Oh. In other words, Jews do nothing wrong. Jews as a group or Jews as a people do nothing wrong, and if you criticize them, you're essentially a liar. Now, that's unfortunately, Tex, that is how the Jewish community operates, that they can do no wrong. You know, they're God's chosen people. They're the apple of God's eye. Whatever they do is of a greater mission. They're a step up above everybody else. I mean, you know, this is the mindset that is so troubling. In the book, I quote the famous actor Richard Dreyfuss. Now, Richard Dreyfuss has been a critic of Israel. Richard Dreyfuss considers himself a progressive Jew. He may even consider himself an atheist, but he still says, he admits that yes, he says, we are the chosen people. And he says, it kind of suggests it's a little bit embarrassing for him to admit that, but yes, even as progressive-minded and free from Judaism as he claims himself to be, and even as a critic of Israel, but he still says, yes, the Jews are God's chosen people. And you see, when you have a mindset like that, that you really are above everybody else, and that is a theme that a lot of people are not aware of, that this is something that Jewish people write about all the time in their newspapers, rabbis, politicians, I mean, they say it out loud. They say it out loud, they say it in black and white, right there in print where you can read it. But yet we're always being told that everybody else is victimizing the Jews
and
suppressing the Jews.
Michael, if any other ethnic group or race had the gall to say, we are special, we only, you know, our race, our DNA is, of course, that's another issue too, but we're so special that we're God's chosen people and only us. I mean, if the Scottish or the Hispanics or the African Americans or the Germans, whoever said such a thing, it would look and sound so preposterous that they would be laughed out of town.
Exactly.
It's like, now what I don't understand, I can understand Christian evangelicals who are so deceived that they read one little thing in the Bible way back in Genesis and throw out the other 65 books of the Bible that explain that one thing, and then come up with some, you know, kooky, cockeyed idea about the Jews being God's chosen forever and ever and all this stuff. Mm-hmm. I can understand that they're taught, they've been so propagandized and all that other stuff. But let's just look at what you call, well, they call themselves the progressives. In other words, really, they're liberals, but they're frightened of the word liberal because people know what that is. And if you use progressive, it sounds so much more, you know, uppity. So they call themselves progressives. Now, these progressives who are not Jews, you would think that they would just blast the Jews and laugh at them and scorn them, you know, and criticize them for claiming they're like God's chosen people. I mean, it's so silly and ridiculous, yet evidently, they are so controlled and so cowed and frightened themselves that even they must keep their traps shut, and they're just frightened to death to say anything negative about the Jews.
Yeah, it's it's amazing. You know, I tell you, it's quite evident in Washington. You see this all the time. You know, you're right, absolutely. I mean, you know, these people who would be the first to condemn if a white person or even a Hispanic person or, you know, anybody else, any other group of people made that claim, there'd be a major uproar. But in the case of the Jews, everybody, you know, I point this out in the book, and I point this out, I think, talking to you before, that there is this, people have this strange approach. I mean, I remember once talking about the Israeli attack on the USS Liberty. Mm-hmm. In which all these American men were killed, you know, on June 8th, 1967.
Yeah, I'm
sure
murdered.
Listeners are familiar with that. Mm-hmm. I don't need to go into the details. But, you know, I was having a conversation with someone about the USS Liberty, and this was someone I had known for many, many years. And you know, she had been in the Navy herself. And here I am talking just some cold, hard history. And she says, well, you know, she said, I had a Jewish roommate in college, and she sends me a Christmas card every year. Now, Tex, there's an absolute disconnect there. I mean, we're talking about a historical event involving a criminal misdeed by the state of Israel against American fighting men in the Middle East, in the Mediterranean, and the person is so, this person, like so many other people, they're unable to separate the mythology surrounding the Jews, that they're God's chosen people and that they're warm and witty and funny and wonderful, you know, and you know, and they're the victims. So people just lose all touch with reality when talking about this issue.
Michael, some years ago, I was invited on the Alan Colmes show, and he had a popular talk show in New York. This before, you know, he got involved with Fox Network and was with Sean Hannity and all that. So Alan Colmes invites me on, and I had, you know, I was writing mostly Christian books at the time, and I had a book that was a number one national bestseller. So this Alan Colmes, you know, he's Jewish, he's quite liberal. He had me on. Now, he decided that he couldn't handle me by himself, I guess, for the 2-hour program. So he invited two Jews on who were supposedly, you know, I don't know, liberals who claim to be theologians. And at the time, I really didn't, you know what I'd know now about Jews and Judaism and such, and what a horrible satanic religion it is. But I was focused on my Christian books. And during the program, all three of them, you know, just lashed out at me. And they wanted to know if I thought that Jesus Christ is the only way to heaven. And I said, yes, I do. But I also, you know, insisted and told them that anyone who believed in Christ would go to heaven, no matter what their race or anything else. But they pilloried me from post to post. How terrible you are, how exclusivist. Only you think you're an exceptional religion. Anyone who says that, you must be satanic, Tex Mars, or you wouldn't believe that yours is the best way. There is no only way. There is no one thing that's better than another. So they hit me with all this relativism. And of course, I wish I knew what I know now. All three of them were Jews lambasting a Christian for simply believing what the Bible says. But they themselves in their Talmud, as you know, not only do they claim that they're God's chosen, they're a superior race, but they believe Gentiles are so inferior that we're just nothing but animals. If I had only known that, boy, wouldn't they have not have shrunk back to their little pits of the abyss?
Yeah, well, you know, see, this is it. I mean, you know, it's openly taught. I mean, some of the most respected rabbis in Israel and elsewhere, you know, have openly said things like this. In the book, I have some quotations from some of these rabbis.
Oh, boy, we're going to have to go for a break right now.
All right.
When we come back, I want to talk about a couple of those quotes and ask your opinion. Wow. Folks, we're talking today with my good friend Michael Collins Piper. His new book, The Confessions of an Anti-Semite. I'm going to tell you how to get it, so stay with us. And when we return, we've got a lot more, and it's going to get really, really wonderful because we're exposing things and shining the light of truth. I'm Tex Mars. You're listening to Power of Prophecy. Be right back. Hello, friends. Tex Mars again. Are you an anti-Semite? Could it be that you're a What, a Jew hater? Well, you know, my good friend Michael Collins Piper certainly is not, and yet some would label him that because he tells the truth about the Jews. I suppose I could make a list from the New Testament of the Bible of anti-Semites. I could. Jesus Christ in the Gospel of John told the Jews, your father is the devil, and his lust you will do. He was a murderer from the beginning. He was telling the Jews, you're a bunch of murderers. You're of your father, the devil. Was Jesus an anti-Semite? Well, certainly Abraham Foxman would say he was. Maybe a self-loathing Jew is what Abraham Foxman would claim. Abraham Foxman being the head of the ADL, the really anti-Christian so-called Jewish group. But over and over in the Bible, you have the Apostle Paul, Peter, John, all of them seem to be anti-Semitic. Isn't that astonishing? When we come back in a minute, I'm going to ask Michael Collins Piper about some other famous anti-Semites. You may be surprised at the names on this list. It seems that he's in very good company. Why? I don't know. I'm going to ask him if maybe Tex Mars might be an anti-Semite. Surely not me. But just in case you'd like to find out, you may want to order this outstanding book. And by the way, it's not all about anti-Semitism and, you know, discussing that. This book has, my goodness, it's packed with really great information about world history, about current events today. It does ask the questions about such as, are the Jews a superior race, as they claim? And how about the blacks and the Jews? Martin Luther King. Well, here's a question for you that this book covers. Are the Jews really Jews? Now, there's a little mystery, isn't it? Are the Jews really Jews? Do they misuse wealth and power? Is there a secret history of the whole world? And have the Jews played a major role in that? What about the Holocaust? Did it really happen in just the way that history says so? Then there's all kinds of things in this book. You know, Michael Collins Piper has been to the Arab world. He went to Tehran. He shook hands with Ahmadinejad, the new Hitler, they say. Boy, I hope we have time to talk about Ahmadinejad and all that. He also talked to Imelda Marcos. You remember Ferdinand and Imelda, the lady that they accused of having so many shoes? Well, we'll talk about that, what she had to say about the Jews. So much here. Jewish power in America. Is the 21st the Jewish century? And will it end in failure and horrible crimes? Must the whole world fight another world war because the Jews want it to do so? And is it true that really that everyone's an anti-Semite? It seems to me, when I read all these Jewish sources, you know, magazines like Forward and the Jerusalem Post newspaper, it seems like about 99% of Americans are anti-Semites. Everybody's an anti-Semite. You know, here one, there one. We're all anti-Semites, according to the Jews. Isn't it? Even other Jews are anti-Semites. But really, what is an anti-Semite? So much in this book. Now, here's what we want to do. We want you to have it, please. You need this book. And by the way, the book is, oh my goodness, it's almost 465 pages or so long. It's got a nice, index in the back and, you know, where you can find things in a great table of contents, make you easily navigate it. But it really is sort of everything you'd like to know and what you'd like to ask Michael Collins Piper. And he writes it in a real, I don't want to call it folksy because he's sort of an intellectual, you know, but he writes it in a way that you'll understand it all. I mean, I did. So I think you'll enjoy the book. It's $28. Again, it's 460 some odd pages long. The Confessions of an Anti-Semite by Michael Collins Piper. Just ask for the Anti-Semite book. And we'll know what that's all about. Or Confessions. I want that Confessions book. Anti-Semite, Confessions of an Anti-Semite, $28. Please add $5 shipping and handling. A total of $33. Hey, that'll get you to the Masonic highest degree level. So $33, that's easy to remember. Believe me, folks, that was just a coincidence. $33. Well, maybe Jerry will change it to $6 postage. No, it's still $5. Okay. $33 postpaid We have plenty of the books in, and I know Michael will get more if we need them here. So you need this book, The Confessions of an Anti-Semite. And as I said, I want to endorse it very heavily, highly recommended, and quite essential, considering what's going on in the Middle East, how America is on the verge of a gigantic explosion of bloodshed and war, and the economic catastrophe that it would result in. Wow. And this book will tell you why we're on that precipice of destruction. So please get this book. A total of $33, and you'll be reading for many nights and scratching your head and saying, wow. Confessions of an Anti-Semite by Michael Collins Piper. To get the book, simply call us toll-free, 1-800-234-9673. That's the number we've had for many years. 1-800-234-9673. You can go to powerofprophecy.com. Powerofprophecy.com. Jerry, I think it's on the home page. Yeah, right on the home page. We put it up front there. So scroll down to where it's at. Click on it. You'll see a description of the book. And you can order it using your PayPal, your charge card, and so forth. Get it online. You can call us anytime, that 1-800 number, 234-9673. Or you can just send $33 and say, Tex, send me the book by Piper, the Pied Piper. Except he takes you to a good place and not to where the rats are at. Well, I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong on that. But in any case, The Confessions of an Anti-Semite. And again, our address is Power of Prophecy, 1708 Patterson, Patterson Road, Austin, Texas. That's the Republic of Texas, but don't write that on your envelope. 78733. Now let's return to my good friend, Michael Collins Piper. Michael, welcome back.
Thanks, Tex. You know, I have to say, I was just looking. I picked up a copy of the book here, and I was looking through it, and I must tell you, I was very honored to have the Anti-Defamation League link the two of us together. You know, in the book, I report some of the things that the Anti-Defamation League has said about me.
Uh-huh.
One of the things they said about me was that I had attended a conference in Austin, Texas.
Bad associations.
And that's right. And it talks about our Power Prophecy conference down there. And when was that? I don't even remember. Sometime about 2 years
ago. It was about 2 years ago. Uh-huh.
Anyway, it's the ADL referred to two prominent anti-Semites, longtime AFP writer Michael Collins Piper and conspiracy preacher Tex.
Oh, I'm a conspiracy preacher.
Yeah.
I preach it. All right.
I have not quite figured out what a conspiracy preacher is, but they seem to think they know. And as you know, as I said, well, if they say I'm an anti-Semite, I must be. So, you know, I how can you argue with the Anti-Defamation League, the most respected organization in America?
No, you're the worst anti-Semite and the nicest guy that would never hurt anybody that I know of, Michael. Well, now listen, let's go. You've really been around the world. You've discussed these issues. I know you went to the infamous Tehran conference in Iran. Didn't you actually shake hands with Ahmadinejad?
No, actually, I had met the president of Iran in New York
prior
to the Holocaust conference.
Yes. Oh, I see. Okay.
I was introduced to him by, he and I have a mutual friend, a very highly regarded Iranian filmmaker named Nadir Talebzadeh. In fact, Nadir, who is a Muslim, made a film about the life of Jesus Christ.
Oh, my goodness.
And it was very popular in Iran, and Nadir happened to be a friend of President Ahmadinejad, having known him for some time, and he arranged for me to have a personal meeting with him in New York, and then subsequent to that, I did go to the infamous Holocaust conference in Tehran, hosted by the Iranian government, and that was quite an experience, needless to say.
Now, one of the persons, you know, I was over in the Orient in Asia during the Vietnam War, and I spent a couple years over there, and I spent some time in the Philippines. Now, at that time, the Marcos were in power. Ferdinand was the president, Imelda Marcos. You've actually met Imelda, and she was sort of like the power behind the throne. She was before Hillary Clinton, except she wasn't like Hillary Clinton, but she was a powerful woman and really a powerful political figure in her own right. Tell us a little bit about your experiences with Imelda.
Well, yeah, actually, I met both of the Marcoses, but it was here in Hawaii after President Marcos was overthrown. You know, his intention, he thought he was going to be flying to his home island And once they got into the air, the Marcoses discovered that they were not flying to their home island, and they were actually being taken captive by the United States.
Mm.
And consequently, they were settled in Hawaii, and they lived in Honolulu for a while. Well, the Marcoses had found out that our newspaper, The Spotlight, was providing truthful coverage of what was happening in the Philippines and of the efforts to overthrow them. And, you know, bear in mind, there's a lot of Americans don't like the Marcoses because they have very negative opinions of them. And those negative opinions have largely been shaped by the, well, the Jewish-controlled mass media in America. So I have to remind people about that because they may hear that name, Imelda Marcos, and say, oh, that's that lady that stole all that money. Well, much more to that story. Suffice it to say, the Marcoses were very impressed with what our newspaper, The Spotlight, the predecessor of American Free Press, the newspaper I write for now, and I might urge people to check it out on the internet at AmericanFreePress.net. But in any case, so one of our reporters for The Spotlight newspaper went over and had an exclusive interview with President Marcos while he was in the while he was in Hawaii. And I happen to be going over to Hawaii, and Willis Cardo, who's the publisher now of American Free Press, he had gone over to visit President and Mrs. Marcos at their home in Honolulu. And when I found out I was going to Hawaii on a vacation with some friends, I said to Willis, I said, could you arrange for me to meet the Marcoses? And he said, sure. Well, lo and behold, there's little Mike Piper spending a whole day on the veranda at the beautiful Marcos home there in Honolulu overlooking the Pacific. And I met the president. He was very, very busy, but he stopped by to thank me for everything that the Spotlight had done to report the truth about him. And I spent the whole day, though, with Imelda, and absolutely charming woman, a very beautiful woman. She was once called one of the most beautiful women in the world, and certainly they've often described her as the most beautiful woman in Asia. And she was absolutely very charming and very entertaining and very politically astute. She was no airhead. I mean, people, you know, often thought of her as this social butterfly with the big wardrobe. No, Imelda Marcos was a very serious geopolitical thinker, I would even describe her as. And you find very few American politicians with the level of intelligence that Imelda Marcos had. Suffice it to say, I spent a whole day with her. In fact, she invited me to spend the night at their house. We'd become so friendly. But at any rate, in the course of our discussion about what happened to them and their experiences, their political experiences, she said something to me that absolutely gave me a chill down my spine. And she was talking, you know, about, as I say, about their experiences, and she said to me, and she said this very casually, but very matter-of-factly, she said, as long as we were in good standing with the Jewish people in New York, everything went well for us. But when they turned against us, everything fell apart.
Mm.
Now, you know, she when she meant the Jewish people in New York, you know, what she meant was the power centers. You know, she was not talking about your average Jewish housewife or a diamond dealer, you know, or a furrier or a liquor store owner. She was talking about the Jewish financial interests, the Jewish media, and she was just very candid about it. You know, in Asia and really the rest of the world, other than perhaps Europe and the United States, people are not as hesitant to talk freely about Jews and Jewish political power as they are in the United States. And she was just saying, and she just said very matter-of-factly what she was, and this is coming from one of the richest, most powerful women in the world, who is nobody's fool. And when I heard Imelda say that, as I say, it literally gave me a chill down my spine, because, you know, I had written about Jewish power for years and had read about it and had an extensive library, you know, and it's all one thing to read about it, or it's one thing to express your opinions about it. But when you hear someone of that magnitude just express very matter-of-factly her own experience and her own perception, that's quite scary. Mm. That's quite scary.
Yeah, it's interesting that so the Jews really brought them down then.
As a matter of fact, there was in fact a very, very distinct Jewish thread in the campaign against the Marcoses. And, you know, even though the Marcoses had been fairly friendly over the years with Israel, you know, not, you know, just as a matter of course, and, you know, And they even had, Jewish business associates and so forth. But Israel's Mossad did, in fact, play a part in the coup d'etat that eventually brought down President Marcos. And there's that's a whole another story for another time.
It must be, both, you know,
massive gold and, you know, that Marcos has had a vast control of the gold that they had obtained years and years before that had originally been secreted in the Philippines by the Japanese during World War II. A whole fascinating story.
Oh, well, that would make the Jews go wild just trying to figure out how to get a hold of that gold.
Yeah,
sort of
yeah.
Like and, they did Gaddafi in Libya. You know, I'm sure one of the reasons he was murdered by the Israeli Mossad and the CIA and the British intelligence was to get at his stores of gold.
Yeah, well, you know, this is the thing. There's so many little hidden intrigues, you know, in our world history that we don't hear about precisely because of the fact that the Jews control the media, you know. And there's other, you know, let me mention another little anecdote that I think tells a lot about a lot of things. And this story was told to me by the late William J. Gill, who was a very well-known journalist, and he had some very high-level intelligence connections. Fascinating guy, a wonderful guy. He's been gone now for some years, but Bill had a mutual friend with Senator Robert Kennedy, who of course had been Attorney General under his brother, President Kennedy's administration. Well, you know, Bobby Kennedy ran for the Senate in New York, and while he was in the Senate, he said a lot of nice things about Israel, and you know, and then he was later ended up, you know, he was shot down by ostensibly shot by a Palestinian Christian named Sirhan Sirhan, but that's another story for another time in and of itself. But at any rate, and so people would say, well, that's what Bobby Kennedy was shot because he was too pro-Israel, et cetera, et cetera. Well, actually, Bobby Kennedy was known to be actually, well, what we would call anti-Semitic. And this came as a surprise to Bill Gill because, you know, Bill was, I can say it now, Bill's dead and gone. He was not only anti-Israel, but he was also traditionally anti-Semitic. He didn't trust Jews. He was a devout Irish Catholic and had a healthy religious distrust for the Jews. But he had a mutual friend with Senator Kennedy, who was an Irish-American labor leader from Pennsylvania, who was very, very close to the Kennedy family on a personal basis. And he said to Bill, he says, now, Bill, I know you don't like Bobby Kennedy because he's a liberal. He says, but you know what, Bill, he said, Bobby feels about the Jews just as you and I do.
Mm.
And he said, in fact, anytime Bobby and I are ever out drinking or out, you know, in a restaurant or in public and we start talking about the Jews, Bobby refers to them as the liberals. So that way people won't know who we're talking about.
That's good.
So you see, this is another case here where, you know, this is a very high-level guy, Senator Robert F. Kennedy, who is, you know, hailed as a, you know, a big friend of Israel. He was a United States senator from New York. But that's what a politician, a real live, famous, beloved politician, thought about the Jews himself. And you know, these are uncomfortable stories for Jewish people to hear. But I think they are stories that underscore the fact that there are people who do have very healthy suspicions of Jewish power, and the Jews understand this. They know that those politicians that are coming up to them and speaking before AIPAC and saying all these wonderful things about how wonderful the Jews are, and you know, we've just got to do everything we can for Israel and so forth. They know these politicians don't really believe that. Now, there may be a few of them who actually do. But you know in your heart, Tex, and I know the listeners know this too, you know, that when those politicians finally get home to their wives and children, they really don't have as many glorious things to say about Israel. And
oh, no, a lot of them are just angry all the time that they're being forced to carry the load Israel. Well, you know, I have a friend who's a well-known Christian leader who I won't mention because of what I'm going to tell you, and he, some years ago, he wrote a book, sold very well, and then one day he and I were talking on the phone. He said, hey, Tex, would you like me to send you the chapter out of my book, like chapter 18 or something, that I didn't put in because the publisher insisted that it not go in the book? And he said, but it's the best. And without it, my book really, it may have sold well, but it's pretty weak. This book, this chapter tells everything. It was like, you know, everything in the book was leading up to this chapter. And I said, sure, I'd like to see it. He says, well, call me when you get it. Well, I got it in, and basically what it was a very in-depth chapter, very documented, in which he basically said, okay, we've talked about a new world order, a global conspiracy, and now I'm going to explain who is behind it. And it was the Jews. It was world Jewry and Israel and the Zionist, imperialist. Terrific chapter. And by the way, when I called him back to tell him I got it, he said, yes, you got that chapter I wrote about the Canadians? And I said, yes, I did. And he said, oh, yeah, the Canadians, they're really something, aren't they? And ever after that, when I talked to him, he just, when I got to him in private, he said, that's what I have to do. He said, even the people here who work for me in this large ministry, I'm afraid that they'll go back and tell the Jews what I said about them. So I just talk about the Canadians. And you think about it, and of course, the publisher would not let that chapter, you know, they were willing to kill the book just to keep that one chapter out. And they were Christian Gentiles.
Isn't exactly.
It's an amazing thing. Well, now listen, in your book, you talk about a lot of famous anti-Semites. Maybe go to that page and you could tell us a little bit about some of these folks. Well, just tell us anything you want to, because there's such a list, but just three or four that strike you.
You know, that's the thing about it, Tex. The list of these people, I mean, you know, politicians, Republicans and Democrats alike, liberals and conservatives. But then you get into these names are people. I mean, I'm just going to read off a list of the names of people who have been known to have written or said, you know, either wrote or said things that were perceived to be anti-Semitic. Walt Disney, Thomas Edison, Henry Ford, Carl Jung, Truman Capote, Theodore Dreiser, Lord Byron, Nathaniel Hawthorne, Thomas Carlyle, Ernest Hemingway, Henry Adams, T.S. Eliot, George Eliot, Washington Irving, I mean, Eugene O'Neill, Somerset Maugham, George Sand, George Bernard Shaw, Robert Louis Stevenson, even George Orwell. I mean, the list, you know, I'll tell you what, you know, if it's pretty good company to be called an anti-Semite when you look at these people who have been called anti-Semites. These are some of the leading figures in industry, in literature. Percy Shelley, H.G. Wells, D.H. Lawrence, Franz Liszt. I mean, you know, the list goes on and on. And, you know, it's funny, in the book as an appendix, which is entitled, Yes, Everybody So It Seems is Anti-Semitic, I have a list which covers, five or six pages. I didn't put the original list together. Somebody who I never knew who did it put it on the internet of everybody that he could find, he or she could find, who had ever been accused of anti-Semitism. And it's an extraordinary list. I mean, it goes on and on and on. I added some names to the list. But, I mean, basically we're talking, it covers pages 455, 456, 457, 458, 459, and 460 in small type, two columns each page. We're talking a lot of people from A to Z who have been accused of anti-Semitism. And, if all these great minds of history and all these other people have been anti-Semitic, I would really feel funny about being a Jew. And I've said this to Jewish friends of mine that you know, you read through, and let me say this, over in the old Spotlight newspaper, we used to get ethnic newspapers from communities all across America, Italian-American newspapers, Serbian-American newspapers, you know, Irish-American newspapers, you know, you name it, we got them. We would get it, hundreds in each, I shouldn't say hundreds, probably dozens every week, okay? And I consequently, in the editorial department, I would skim through them looking for news items and so forth. And one thing I noticed about these ethnic newspapers is that they were all very positive and forward-looking in their attitude and outlook. They were very proud of their heritage, whether it was Poland or Italy or Ireland or you name it. But they were always Americans.
Mm.
They were writing as Americans. They would celebrate their ethnic heritage, celebrate their history, celebrate their contributions to America. And very, very positive, very friendly. But you know what, Tex? I noticed at the same time reading Jewish newspapers. And this is, and I know, you, Tex, I know you've read Jewish newspapers. I know you read them just like I do. And I think you'll have to agree with me that more often than not, Jewish newspapers are dedicated to one particular thread. It's either who the Jews don't like or who the Jews think doesn't like them.
Mm.
And it's a very negative thing, you know, and as I said to some Jewish friends of mine, I would hate to get up in the morning and look in the mirror and think, who hates me? And that seems to me to be the concept of hate seems to override the Jewish mindset. And you know, and then you look at the Jewish religious teachings coming from rabbis, Jewish clergymen, texts. I mean, you know, they're supposed to be, you know, the average American has a positive outlook towards, you know, people, you know, clergymen, you know, because you know they're perceived to be the ultimate arbiters of morality or the people who represent the best of society, you know, spiritually, of whatever religion. And yet you read things from Jewish rabbis that
oh,
absolutely drip with hatred for non-Jews.
They really do. And another thing that I've noticed in these publications, and we only have about another minute here, but I wanted your opinion on it, is they don't talk about America except what America can do for Israel. Everything is Israel-focused. You know, they actually say, many of them, that whatever position they're in, whether it's a corporate or a political position, whether they're a congressman or what, some of them actually say, when I wake up in the morning, the first thing I ask myself is, what can I do for Israel today?
Oh, you know, Tex, I had a friend who's a Greek-American who was dating a Jewish girl, and she was a self-described militant Zionist.
Oh, boy.
That was her term to describe herself. And she told my friend that she would never, ever really feel safe living in America unless there was an Israel for her to take refuge in.
Yeah, which is an amazing, because America
is
the refuge of all of history for Jews. Well, Michael, you've done a great job today. We didn't get to some of these things. I hope we'll come back again maybe a little bit down the road when folks have a chance to get a hold of your book, because I know so many are going to be buying The Confessions of an Anti-Semite. You've done a great work here. But would you please give our best to Willis Carto, a great
hero? Yes, indeed. In fact, Willis, just before I came on the phone, Willis told me to give you his regards.
Okay,
I will
good.
Come right back.
Well, he's a great, great American hero, one of the top in my mind. But American Free Press, all of you guys there, the whole staff, the ladies and gentlemen, y'all are doing a wonderful work for God and country. Let me just state it flat out. I recommend everybody get a subscription. By the way, what is the phone number? Do you not have it offhand for
the subscription number for American Free Press? The toll free number it's an 888 number. It's 888-699-NEWS. That's 888-699-6397.
It's a weekly newspaper, unlike any other, folks. Man, get this. Please get the American Free Press. It's one of a kind. Well, this is Tex Mars. My great guest has been Michael. Thank you so much, Michael Collins Piper.
Thank you, Tex, and God bless all the good folks down there at Power Prophecy. We up here at American Free Press, we sure appreciate them, too.
Hey, give my best to Donald, your cat.
I will do that.
And we'll tell Prissy that you said, our little ministry cat, you said nice things about her, too. Is that all right?
All right. Sounds good to me, Tex.
Hey, God bless you, my friend.
Okay.
Okay, bye-bye.
Thanks.